Back in 1955, I was 14 years old, and I was playing bench on a high school football team. We were coming back from a game in a school bus, and one guy started reading out a story about a beautiful girl naked and being sacrificed. And the whole bus quieted down, and all us guys listened to this story about this beautiful girl being sacrificed. Back in the 50s, the movies were full of horror movies that talked about beautiful women being attacked by monsters. In fact, every single advertisement for every single horror movie always had some beautiful woman with her clothes being torn off and some monster attacking her, or Dracula drinking her blood, or something of the sort. Naturally, you would assume that that was a period of violence against women. And, of course, anybody who knows the statistics knows that in the 50s, violence against women was at its minimum, at least among decent people. But those same decent people were the ones who went to see all these horror movies and all these women being attacked. One movie was called The Woman Eater. Now, the interesting thing about The Woman Eater was that it was a plant, but while it was a carnivorous plant, I must say it had great taste. The only thing it seemed to be willing to eat was beautiful young starlets. So this fellow was reading out this story, and it quieted down, which is kind of unusual. It quieted down a whole busload of high school football players. This is not an easy thing to do. According to all the theories, these people would have rushed out and massacred all sorts of young girls. But what would be contradictory to today's people is the people sitting in that bus, us old country boys, were the last generation of Americans who would take it upon themselves, who would feel absolutely obligated if an actual girl was being attacked. We would get out there and fight about it ourselves. We wouldn't just call the police. More progressive parts of the country had already adopted the idea that the last thing anybody should do if they saw a woman attacked was to do anything about it. That was truly old-fashioned. That was truly out of date. And there was a famous incident in the early 60s in New York City, which reflected modern thinking. A woman was slowly stabbed to death by a black man, white woman. And though there was a lot of discussion of it in the paper, the national sensation, it was never mentioned that it was a black man and a white woman. The theme of the newspaper coverage was, why didn't they call the authorities? Nobody encouraged New Yorkers to do anything about the fact that this woman was out there dying for about 20 minutes or 30 minutes, I think it was. But they were supposed to call the police, and when the police could get around to it, they would possibly send somebody. Although we have had incidents, as we know, of recorded emergency calls when the people would call and call and call and the authorities wouldn't show up. In South Carolina, we would have been on the street, which is exactly what we are not supposed to do. But once people get tamed to the point where they're supposed to call the authorities for everything and not take part, they pretty soon learn that they're not supposed to take interest. So this girl was being stabbed and stabbed and stabbed, running around, screaming for help.
She kept screaming for help. It went on for about half an hour, and nobody there even called the police. They did not want to get involved. They were part of the modern attitude. The modern attitude, however, is a little different from that. No one gets involved, but you are supposed to call the police. But back then, the police would always ask you who you were, and they seemed to be more interested in who you were than the incident you were reporting. They did stop that.
They stopped that because every modern citizen knows that
You are supposed to report to the authorities. If someone is being butchered in the street, you're supposed to stay out of it. You're just a common, ordinary civilian. You don't have a uniform. You don't have a judge's robe. And so you shouldn't interfere with the criminal's activities. After all, he is part of System 2. System wouldn't exist without the criminals. You're not supposed to interfere because the police are supposed to take care of it. And believe me, if you defend somebody, I've been there, you're going to be in a lot more trouble than the guy who's doing the attacking. But back then, they still had this thing about the police questioning people when they call. Well, now they don't ask who you are. Back then they did. So nobody called at all. But today they're more advanced because they want you to report to the authorities, and then you can sit back and watch whoever it is being butchered. At almost exactly the same time, I remember in the early 60s, a woman was out on the street in Columbia, South Carolina at night. It was considered perfectly reasonable back then. It was a primitive society. It was considered perfectly reasonable for a woman to be alone on the street at night, perfectly respectable woman, and a black guy grabbed her purse and she screamed, and a friend of mine who owned some M1, it's a carbine, I don't know if you call it a rifle or not, showed up on the street. I had my little 25. I was out on the street. Another guy was out on the street, all within about 2 minutes. And this woman was holding on to her purse. The black guy was trying to grab the purse, and he looked around and saw three guys coming in, all armed. And I think he broke several Olympic records getting the hell out of there, because this was primitive. This was South Carolina. What we were supposed to do was called the police. Now, according to all of today's theories, we should not have had guns.
Any modern sociologist would explain to you that if you find some nutcase who goes to the drive-in movies and salivates over a movie called The Woman Eater, the last thing in God's world you should do is hand him a gun. Like everything else, movies should be submitted to the authorities before the public sees them. The authorities will know which movies would lead to violence.
The movies that we saw should have caused us to slaughter women. And it turns out that all of that is dead wrong. I was very heartened by the actions of the people on Flight 93 when the hijackers were actually thwarted, but everybody was killed. That's pretty thoroughly old-fashioned American. The people on the other planes, the ones that hit the, on September 11th, that hit the towers and killed 3,000 people while we sat and watched, that was modern American. Not really their fault, but they'd always been taught that they weren't supposed to resist themselves. Which leads me to the title of this program. The title of this program is capital D dot capital I dot capital C dot capital T dot A. And it stands for Don't Interfere, Call the Authorities. That, of course, is the story of our modern age. You're not supposed to interfere. Now, no plane would have been hijacked if one single honest person on that plane had a gun on his person. So, naturally, the reaction of authorities is to take every single gun away from, and every single umbrella, the little umbrellas, you know, and the drinks, those aren't allowed anymore, because they can be used to hold up the whole plane. And when I am sitting around an airport and I'm watching them frisking grandmothers and so forth to be sure that no honest citizen has any weapon on them, That strikes me as just a little bit nuts, but then again, everything else does. So in the 50s, all of us should have been slaughtering women right and left, because we really enjoyed those movies where the women got chased down by the monsters and serial killers and all that stuff. We were people who were willing to have violence. Violence was not that big a deal to us. But the violence was directed at the enemies of society. And a woman was a hell of a lot safer among us than she possibly would have been
in our politically correct society.
Also, one of the more unnoticed things, although many are, is that back when the concealed weapons permit business came up first, that was in the early 1990s, all of the people against it, conservatives and liberals, screamed there will be a bloodbath when people are allowed to carry guns. Well, as a matter of fact, not only has there not been a bloodbath, the best kept secret is that there has not been a single incident that I have heard of, and believe me, I would have heard of it, because the national press would have blared it from coast to coast, of anybody with a legitimate gun permit that he had to earn using his gun incorrectly. Police do it all the time, but the interesting thing is, in South Carolina, where I live, there are over 30,000 permit holders, earned, what I call earned permits and not political permits.
The old permits were given out on the basis of political pull, and that's the system both liberals and police authorities won't back. When you had political pull with a sheriff or the local police or whatever, or you were elected judge or something like that, you were automatically given a gun permit because you had political pull. But these permits today have to be earned, and you have a right to one if you can go through the background check, the course, and earn it.
Our local paper, the state paper, is one of these in-your-face liberal newspapers. It's owned from a chain owned by a syndicate, and it would love to find one single incident of anybody misusing a gun who has a permit. It would be their crowning glory if they could do that. We're talking about over 30,000 permits. We're talking about over 10 years of permits. We're talking, therefore, just in this little state of South Carolina, 300,000 years of people having permits and nobody misuses the things. This is never mentioned, of course.
And the bloodbath that was predicted over and over and over and wildly by those who opposed the idea of people without political pull being able to earn permits, that's never mentioned today at all either. The bloodbath that they kept talking about, that all these cowboys who earned the permits would go out and slaughter people, that was everywhere, especially in the New York Times. Funny thing, it's been completely forgotten. And I guarantee you, no respectable conservative is ever going to bring it up. Another thing that will never be mentioned in public is the hundreds of thousands of times when people show up with a gun, or criminals know there's a gun in a house, and violence is prevented. You're never going to see that in the newspaper. I've never seen it in the newspaper. I'm sure it must be somewhere, but you don't see it much. You certainly would see it if a permit holder misused a gun, but you're not about to see a case in the newspaper where someone did not call the authorities. He simply took care of the situation himself with a gun.
So like in the paper, you never see anybody who defended his home. When was the last time you ever saw anybody who successfully defended his home or his business with a gun in the newspaper. So, naturally, nobody mentions this, but the fact is that when some nut starts shooting up a store or starts shooting up a Hardee's or something, the newspapers always record that he had a gun. Now, if one single permit holder with a gun on him had been in that place, the nutcase with the gun would have been dead. The permit holder would have filled him with bullets. It's funny how you never notice that. So, naturally, when they talk about airline safety, the second thing they talk about is being sure that the pilots don't have guns, and certainly being sure that no honest citizen has a gun, so that the only people who could possibly have a gun would be someone, or any weapon, would be someone who sneaks it on board. This is the usual thing. Very true, simple and very true. When guns are outlawed, outlaws have guns. There are 3 million guns in England, some of which are accounted for. They have terrific gun controls. I don't know if they've managed to outlaw toy pistols or not, but they have made a genuine effort at outlawing toy pistols there. And, of course, as in all of Europe, the crime rate is climbing like crazy. There are two honorable exceptions to this. One is Estonia, where private citizens, the last I heard, were encouraged to have weapons. The other is Switzerland. There are a lot of guns in those countries. And, of course, when Europe had a low crime rate, Switzerland's crime rate was pretty well like any other white European country's crime rate, very low. The theory being that if Switzerland had all those guns, they really should have had the slaughter that everybody predicts if toy guns are not outlawed. But it was never mentioned that Switzerland's crime rate was not noticeably different from anybody else's. And now, I would like to know what their relative crime rate is, but nobody's interested in studying that. And the most disgusting examples of this are the good little colonial peoples. So like the good Southerners who are liberals and want to be just like New York City. We're colonials too, but a lot of us resist it. But the good little colonials in some countries, like Australia, have followed along with this gun control and all the other latest stuff that all the truly sophisticated people in London are pushing. God, I really hate it when people grovel that way and decide that anything England is doing or New England is doing or somehow very sophisticated. Turns my stomach. Right after Australia threw in a heavy gun law because some nut was shooting people in some city there, the natural result was the crime rate shot up because the criminals now had a holiday. This is pretty logical, but it's not the sort of thing anybody ever listens to. So we're back to dicta. Don't interfere, call the authorities, which is the disease of our age. All of us have watched the police chases of nutcase drivers on television a lot. And one thing that charmed everybody was when a policeman, when a highway patrolman would CB, call on the citizen's band, he would call a trucker in front and ask the trucker to block off this nutcase. Well, guess what? The courts have ruled that that's illegal. Citizens, private citizens, have no right to be interfering in law enforcement. And therefore, a trucker who pulls in front of some nutcase driver who's tearing along at 80 miles an hour and maybe going to or 120 miles an hour, and who may be going to a school zone and killing children, that trucker is an evil evil man. Now, what was nice about watching those truckers do that was it was kind of, and I think all of you will think this way, old-fashioned. There was a decent person doing a decent thing. It was his highway, after all. It's his country. And he was stopping this guy from, quite openly, trying to kill people by driving in a crazy way. But the courts decided that this is illegal, both on the part of the highway patrolman and on the part of the trucker, because civil rights or something. But basically, it violated the dicta rule. Don't interfere. Call the authorities. Since dicta went in steadily under the Warren Court back during the 60s, the crime rate has gone steadily up. People are terrified of anybody who's violent because they know very well that if they shoot a criminal, they'll be first, the authorities will try to put them in prison. If they can't put them in prison, then they will ruin them financially. First of all, of course, you have to be financially ruined before the state will pay for your defense. So all they have to do is keep hitting you with charges, and you will be destroyed financially. And then there's the good old cases where the groveling, slavish juries will give huge damages to some poor little criminal, well, some poor little victim of society who has been injured by this evil person who didn't call the authorities but actually defended somebody himself. And, of course, the people who are doing this are publicly elected, because everybody shares this idea that people should not defend themselves. That is the business of the authorities. You have to remember that the police and the judges share a common interest. That is, that the people have to feel that the only protection they have consists of the system and all the money and all the power that judges and lawyers and policemen enjoy comes from the fact that the public is not allowed to defend themselves. So in England, for example, as I keep pointing out, almost half of the burglaries occur when the family is still inside the house. They're called hot burglaries. And in Europe, burglars don't even bother. They know that if the family is there, it doesn't make any difference. They can go in. They're the only ones who have the weapons and the only ones who are committing the violence. And if you try to defend yourself in your home, Alan Dershowitz or some other, quote, civil liberties lawyer, unquote, is going to get you. You're going to be either in prison or ruined financially. We all know that. The problem with this is, of course, that we take it for granted so much that the basic insanity of it is never noticed. Now, this bunch of football players that I was among, South Carolina country guys, who were sitting there listening to a story about a girl being sacrificed, and who went to all these movies, The Woman Eater and so forth, these were the same guys who constituted the last generation of Americans. And remember, we were considered very old-fashioned, even at the time, in the 50s. That was the last generation of Americans who would not hesitate to blow somebody away that dropped into their house, that was a burglar in that house. And that was the last generation of males in America who were looked upon by their family as men. I think one of the worst things about the English situation is that here's a bunch of children. Here are the children, and their father is supposed to be protecting them, and their father is down in the corner weeping gently, along with the mother and the little girl, while the burglars take what they want. And there's no question that their father is going to defend them. Their father is not going to defend them. His father can't defend them. And he doesn't want to, because obviously he's voting for all these members of parliament. So, to an old South Carolinian like me, this is an insane situation. I think that is the problem. It is so insane that it's like the big lie. It is so insane that no one questions it. This insanity began, or at least became imposed, by the World War II generation. You know, the one that saved the world. The World War II generation saved the world by coming into a war. At the time of World War II, there were two totalitarian countries. It was Germany and Russia. The rest were authoritarian, which is pretty routine in world history. By the time the World War II generation got through with saving the world, a third of the human race was trapped behind Berlin walls, fences, and shot down if they tried to escape from the communist countries. Thereby, according to leftists, the World War II generation had saved the world. That is to say, they had made the world safe for communism. And even though a third of the human race was under totalitarian regimes run by Stalin and Mao Zedong, who were pretty rough characters, they actually outdid Hitler very well. But they had saved the world because the dictatorships were leftist dictatorships. So nobody's allowed to question that. The greatest generation then took another step. Now, let me tell you what the greatest generation was trained to be. They always say, the military will make a man of you. Well, if the military, at least back in World War II, if the military made a man of you, then it had failed completely. What the World War II generation called themselves was dog faces. The reason they called themselves dog faces was because basic training in the military was aimed at making you react like a dog. First thing you learned was that your sergeant was God, that the government was bigger than you were, that you obeyed the rules, and it was 4 years of the obedience training that you give a dog. But it got worse. Then there was the GI Bill of Rights, and 50% of the World War II generation took advantage of the GI Bill of Rights to go to college. I remember them distinctly. They would always sort of beat their chests and say, I know how to obey. Every time something came up about oppression of the South or getting rid of the white race or anything else, these guys would say, by God, I was in World War II, and I know that the government's bigger than I am, and all real practical men know that. They actually, in the sort of insanity that we take for granted, they actually bragged about how manly they were by surrendering. So like in Britain, the people are very proud of the fact that the father weeps in the corner with his children. Actually, I was, there's an interesting thing, interesting incident. One very good guy from Europe was at one of our picnics, on one of our stormfront picnics, and he was talking about the fact that, while I kept mentioning the statistics showed that European crime had gone out of sight, He said, no, no, there are no such incidents. Then he relaxed a bit a while later and pointed out how well he slept. And he said that he slept through 2 burglaries in his home. Then he said, well, now, wait a minute. They weren't real burglaries. He said they were just kids. Well, I tell you what, if kids routinely broke into my home in the United States, I wouldn't consider that a minor matter. I'd wonder what in the hell was going on. But to a European, that's pretty routine. They got a right to break in. And that's sort of the way they live there. Or at least according to what he accidentally said. That's the way they live there. I'm sure every European would tell me, oh, no, 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 this never happens. No crime, no crime, no problem. But the crime rate in, for example, in England, your chances of being robbed in a small city, in a country which used to be almost comical for its obedience to the law, in my memory, now your chances are better at being robbed in a small city in England than they are in New York City at its worst. Crime rate has gone down somewhat in New York City because we're sticking all of those career criminals in the prison. And so the crime rate has been going down because what we said in the first place, if somebody is a career criminal, put him away for life. We've started doing it. And the crime rate has been going down because the crime rate was, after all, mostly a result of these people. This is not rocket science, but it's not the sort of thing that we were taught or the World War II generation was taught in college. They were taught in college to leave everything to the authorities, that criminologists would rehabilitate the criminals. It's almost incredible now to realize the kind of unmitigated crap that the World War II generation swallowed whole. But the damage was done. And now, everybody says, we're so happy that everybody who gets on an airplane is totally disarmed. Boy, that'll take care of things, won't it? Yeah, right. That'll really take care of things. Now, I hate to break into the chorus of George Bush is a bad guy and his feet stink, but there are a couple of facts I would like to have people know and maybe even repeat. I know, as I say, writing about Iraq is much more topical and so forth, but Switzerland is full of guns. They have gun clubs, they have guns all over the place. They don't have any higher rate of crime than any other European country, and that is to say, they didn't have a higher rate of crime than any other European country. And I have noticed that no one has been willing to make a study of just how fast the crime rate has risen in other countries and whether this violent crime rate has increased in Switzerland. Because we all accept the idea that if people are allowed to have guns, then gun violence is going to go up. Switzerland was a white country, still largely is, and they have the same crime rate, or they had the same crime rate as pretty well any other European country. The fact is, if you break into a Swiss home, I'm sure that if a Swiss person tries to defend himself, being good Europeans, the authorities will make sure that the criminal is given another chance of rehabilitation, and the person who shoots him or threatens him, and who did not call the authorities, the person who is interfering in the legal process by defending himself, I'm sure that person will be in deep trouble. that's the way our world works. But, of course, that fact is not as exciting as the fact that Bush's feet stink and so forth, so nobody's going to go into it much. It's part of our basic insanity on both the right and the left. We don't talk about the real insanity of our age. It's sort of like what I say about immigration. The reason that Mexico is such a mess, people say, well, it's historical, geographical, but whatever it is, it's a result of the Mexican population. The idea is that if Mexicans come to the United States, their income goes up, and therefore, according to libertarians, that's good, because there's something magic about that line between Mexico and the United States. As soon as somebody crosses it and the income goes up, that must be a good thing. Now, it takes a redneck like me to point out that the reason Mexico is a mess is because of Mexicans. And if you bring the Mexicans up here, it will be a mess. If the Third World pours into Europe, it's going to become the Third World. This is sanity. It is not as exciting as the idea that George Bush's feet stink and the exciting news that politicians lie to us. But I think we could do more good attacking the basic insanity, because most people are becoming aware that there's an insanity there. Dicta. Don't interfere. Call the authorities. That is the insanity of our age.